Good morning, everyone. As you see, I have a couple of guests here with me. You've heard their voices before. Over here, this is Danella. She called in last week when we were talking. That was last week, wasn't it?
About the election.
About the election, yes. And JJ, you've heard him call in before. And today, Danella is going to be speaking on the Black Panther Party briefly. She went to one of the meetings. She has the Black Panther Party paper. And I'm going to let you go on and start, Danella.
Good morning, everyone. As the daughter of a Panther, the movement is deep in my heart, and I had the opportunity to join others at a rally in celebration of the 50th anniversary of the Black Panther Party. At that event, there were several people present who have been moved by and whose lives have been deeply affected by the movement of the Panthers. Everything that they've done in the community, from offering us protection to creating programs that are still used today, like the free breakfast program for children in schools. The government takes credit for that program, but it was actually started by the Panther Party. At the rally that I attended, they also gave away groceries, which is something that has been a part of the movement for the entire 50-year existence. And that moved me because there are still those of us in the community who are in need of assistance in some way, or just to know that there is a system of support for us. So there was an article in the paper that I'd like to share that was written by Elbert Howard, who was an original Black Panther Party founder, and there's some excerpts from his article I'd like to share with you. He says, "Looking back at the Black Panther Party is like looking at a large landscape of people, locations, and events in time and space. 1966 to 1974. As memory fades with getting older, I will try not to document details of people, dates, and events. However, I tend to remember working with some of the most dynamic, resourceful, and dedicated community organizers on the planet. Oakland, California, 1966 became the birthplace of the Black Panther Party. A small group of young black men got together and explored ideas of ways to confront and solve racial injustice. Hanging out around the campus of Oakland City College in North Oakland were the core group that made up the Black Panther Party. Bobby Seale, Little Bobby Hutton, Reggie, Sherman Forte, Elbert Big Man Howard, and Huey Newton. I first took notice of the impact and reach of the Black Panther Party in 1966 when a party member who had just returned from New York came by the Grove Street office and reported that a chapter was developing in Harlem. The brother's name was Pennywell. He was not around very long. I think he returned to New York to continue to organize. From that period on, the party grew very rapidly in California, with chapters and branches opening in Richmond, Vallejo, Marin City, San Francisco, San Diego, and Los Angeles. To the north, we had chapters open in Seattle, Washington, and Portland, Oregon. Easterly, we had chapters in Denver, Kansas City, Omaha, Des Moines, Houston, Milwaukee, New Orleans, Memphis, Chattanooga, Nashville, Atlanta, Detroit, Winston-Salem, Baltimore, Philadelphia, Washington, D.C., Jersey City, New Haven, Bridgeport, Boston, and I am sure there are some I have missed, but not intentionally. At any rate, the people involved are what is most important. Those who did the work, and most of all, those who paid the price are still paying the price in prison for many years on trumped-up charges." So for me, that is really impactful because the Panthers were so perceived as being so political, a lot of people were, like he said, thrown in prison on trumped up charges, and many of them are still prisoners of war to this day. And their impact on us cannot be stopped by having them imprisoned, because they still have a voice, as this brother does, being able to write to us and, you know, express themselves and have us share their words with you, the larger audience.
Okay, I'd like for you to go now to where it says there are some lessons learned from the Black Panther Party of 50 years ago that apply to community organizations today.
Number one, be open and willing to change. If something does not work, find a way to change it. Number two, always listen to others, whether you use their suggestions or not. Number three, admit to your mistakes and correct them. Number four, never, ever lie. Number five, always deliver on your promises. Number six, make a life and death commitment to your beliefs. And number seven, practice what you preach. Be willing to face death for what you believe in and spit in the face of your oppressors. Again, that was Elbert Big Man Howard, an original BPP founding father.
Okay, I know. I saw that 10-point program in here somewhere. Do you know where it is? The Black Panther Party 10.
Yeah.
It was in here somewhere. Here it is, in the back.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Go on and read that.
What we want, what we believe. And this was written by Huey Newton, the Minister of Defense of the Black Panther Party. Number one, we want freedom. We want power to determine the destiny of our black community. We believe that black people will not be free until we are able to determine our destiny. Number two, we want full employment for our people. We believe that the federal government is responsible and obligated to give every man employment or a guaranteed income. We believe that if the white American businessman will not give full employment, then the means of action should be taken from the businessman and placed in the community so that the people of the community can organize and employ all of its people and give a higher standard of living. Number three, we want an end to the robbery by the capitalists of our black community. We believe that this racist government has robbed us, and now we are demanding the overdue debt of 40 acres and two mules. 40 acres and two mules were promised 100 years ago as restitution for slave labor and mass murder of black people. We will accept the payment in currency, which will be distributed to our many communities. The Germans are now aiding the Jews in Israel for the genocide of the Jewish people. The Germans murdered 6 million Jews. The American racist has taken part in the slaughter of over 50 million black people. Therefore, we feel that this is a modest demand that we make. We want decent housing fit for the shelter of human beings. We believe that if the white landlords will not give decent housing to our black community, then the housing and land should be made into cooperatives so that our community, with government aid, can build and make decent housing for its people. That was number four. Number five, we want education for our people that exposes the true nature of this decadent American society. We want education that teaches us our true history and our role in the present-day society. We believe in an educational system that will give to our people a knowledge of self. If a man does not have knowledge of himself and his position in society and the world, then he has little chance to relate to anything else. Number six, we want all black men to be exempt from military service. We believe that black people should not be forced to fight in the military service to defend a racist government that does not protect us. We will not fight and kill other people of color in the world who, like black people, are being victimized by the white racist government of America. We will protect ourselves from the force and violence of the racist police and the racist military by whatever means necessary. Number seven, we want an immediate end to police brutality and murder of black people. We believe we can end police brutality in our community by organizing black self-defense groups that are dedicated to defending our black community from racist police oppression and brutality. The Second Amendment to the Constitution of the United States gives a right to bear arms. We therefore believe that all black people should arm themselves for self-defense. Number eight, we want freedom for all black men held in federal, state, county, and city prisons and jails. We believe that all black people should be released from the many jails and prisons because they have not received a fair and impartial trial. Number nine, we want all black people, when brought to trial, to be tried in court by a jury of their peer group or people from their black communities as defined by the Constitution of the United States. We believe that the court should follow the United States Constitution so that black people will receive fair trials. The 14th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution gives a man a right to be tried by his peer group. A peer is a person from a similar economic, social, religious, geographical, environmental, historical, and racial background. To do this, the court will be forced to select a jury from the black community from which the black defendant came. We have been and are being tried by all white juries that have no understanding of the average reasoning man of the black community. And number 10, we want land, bread, housing, education, clothing, justice, and peace. When in the course of human events it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and nature's God entitle them, a decent respect of the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to the separation. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it, and to institute a new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem likely, most likely, to affect their safety and happiness. Prudence, indeed, will indicate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes. And accordingly, all experience hath shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations, pursuing invariably the same subject, evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty, to throw off such government and provide new guards for their future security. And again, that's the 10-point program by the Black Panther Party, written
now,
by Huey Newton.
A lot of people didn't know that the Black Panther Party was first formed here in Oakland, California. Do you know where they were?
And at DeFemery Park and Adeline and
no,
Adeline
they weren't.
And 14th Street.
No, they weren't.
That's what it says in there.
I don't care what that says in there. See, I've known Huey before the Black Panther Party. They was in Bolson's Locker, the bar.
Okay. So that's where they met.
They met the first time, yeah, and had that first discussion.
Okay.
Yes, when they had their first discussion.
That's a piece of trivia that I never knew.
They were in Bolson's Dorsey's Locker.
So that's
Dorsey's, don't forget Bolson's Dorsey's Locker, because, see, the Dorsey's still had it, but they took the Bolson's out of it.
Right.
And that dealt with, who was that? Somebody was a merchant seaman or something. Well, anyway, that's where they first discussed it,
okay.
Right there at the bar. And they said, okay, we need to take this further. And so, yes, they did go to what is, we wanted to name Bobby Hutton Park.
Right.
It's still called DeFemery Park. But they wanted to name it Bobby Hutton Park because do you know how Bobby was killed?
For those who don't know, we should.
Okay, I am going to. I just wanted to know if you were killed. If you knew. Well, anyway, this is when they were, the police swarmed in one of the offices, the outhouses, and they tried to keep Bobby alive. They told him to take off his clothes and go out there so they would know that he didn't have
an arm.
Yeah, he was unarmed, and they shot him anyway. The Oakland police shot him anyway. There was no way he could have had a weapon, and that created a riot somewhat here in Oakland, a little small riot or protest about police brutality. See, a lot of people don't understand that the Black Panther Party was formed to police the police.
Right.
And many people didn't realize that that was the reason the Black Panther Party started, because like they're doing now, even then they were shooting our young black boys, and things. Who was that other boy that got? Was his name Tyrone Guyton? Tyrone, I think his name was Tyrone Guyton. He stole a car, and they caught up with him. He had no weapons and nothing. They just shot him down. He wasn't what 15, 16 years old. And the man who had the car was very upset about that. He says, "You don't shoot nobody about no car."
Right, you know. Well, now, you know, it's even less things than that. It's walking through a neighborhood with, you know, a juice and a pack of Skittles. It's being perceived as having stolen some blunt wraps out of a store. It doesn't have to be anything of any consequence or value to allow them to shoot us down on the street like dogs.
And that's what they have been doing here for a number of years. Now, it slowed down some, of course, with the Black Panther Party bringing all these issues to light. But see, it has taken a lot of people from then to date to realize what we were saying. I thought, what's the boy's name? They beat half to death that made the TV. The first one, I can't think of his name right now. He's dead, too. He died in a swimming pool or something. I can't think of his name. It might.
Well, there was a young man yesterday on the news who went swimming with friends, and a white family, a mother and her two sons, tried to drown him in front of his friends and family. He was 15 years old. He escaped, and they were arrested and charged with a hate crime. But this sense of power over us and being able to dominate us and treat us any type of way is increasing, especially now with who's been elected as the current president.
Okay, I'm glad you brought that up. Because, see, when I first started this radio, I started off with the word love. Okay, that we don't have enough love in this entire world. There's not enough love. And I'm explaining what agape love means, okay? We have a lot of hate going on here, and there's no particular race. You know, white folks hate us, we hate them, and look like everybody hates us, Mexicans, everybody, and look like we're turning that around to hate them back. Evil begets evil.
That's right.
Okay? And this is one of the problems I have with the churches here in Oakland, because we're looking at it as the person, but not as their spirit. Your
right.
spirit could be influenced by clean and unclean spirits. And I don't think these ministers are explaining what's going on here and why this world is this way. This world is the earth is Satan's, the devil, Lucifer. His spirit is all over the place. He was given a long-term lease of earth through Adam. And he ain't going nowhere. So therefore, the Bible has given us a number of examples of how we could keep Satan from influencing us. And we have a problem with it. And I think if the ministers would explain this more, the people will understand why they are even inside the church gossiping, talking about each other. Mm-hmm. They done brought the devil in the church.
Mm-hmm.
And if the ministers explain it, how it goes, maybe your congregation would understand it better. See, first of all, when those angels were kicked out, he took a third of the heaven, kicked them out of heaven, and they came down here to earth. God kept them with their powers. Whatever God gives you, he does not take it away. He didn't take away any of the angels that were fallen powers away. So what he did is he gave us power over them. And we don't understand that.
Hmm.
And see, you have to have it in your heart and your mind in order for you to not allow unclean spirits to influence you. Now, the Ten Commandments are a great help. I started already, even here on the radio, talking about them. And the Tenth Commandment was originally intended for you not to break Commandments 1 through 9, because it's the emotion and thought commandment. So you have to, at that level, get them evil thoughts out your mind, because the next thing you're going to do is start opening up your mouth, saying things, because you still have those evil spirits. That's the ninth commandment. See, I'm taking them, I'm going up from the 10th up instead of down, because somewhere around the 4th or 5th commandment, we lose people if you try to teach them from 1 through 10. But anyway, I have started teaching the 10th commandment. And see, your thoughts dictate your actions.
That's very true.
And if you're thinking evil, you're getting ready to do some evil or say something evil. And, of course, that has nothing to do with love. So I'm going to, I ran into the words of another song, which was a part of the television show, and nobody got this one right either. This was a $100 song. I had about three songs that nobody did, they didn't get. And I had about 20, 30 songs. But I'm going to read one now. And this was one of Curtis Mayfield's latest songs. And it says, the title of it is Just a Little Bit of Love. And this is what it says. You hear me calling, calling, brother. Are you listening? We need to cool the night for our future, for the little bitty boys and girls. We need to take the time, come together. Are you willing? So we can make it right for the people and everyone around the world. Now, this is the chorus. Just a little bit of love to make it right. Just a little bit of time to cool the night, just a little bit of space to keep us tight, just a little bit of love. We got to come together. Everybody's searching in confusion, no solution. We look inside ourselves for the answer, but we really don't understand. We all must be inclined to start sharing, to start caring. And if the sun shines your way, you will find love, because love is the only way. Now look all around you, people, children dying, people crying, but nobody seems to care till it's their time. They really don't give a damn. We got to find a way to start loving, to start giving. But if we procrastinate and we blow it, then everybody goes to hell. This is they have two choruses here, and this is the second chorus. We don't need destruction. We don't need to kill. We don't need corruption. We just need to chill. We don't need carjacking. We don't need the pain. We don't need the crack. And we just need to change. And then it goes back to that first chorus, just a little bit of love to make it right. Just a little bit of time to cool the night. Just a little bit of space to keep us tight. Just a little bit of love. Now, I'm one that like message songs. A lot of people don't like message songs if it doesn't have that boom da boom da boom beat and things of that nature. So they have a tendency not to listen to the words. We've had entertainers that have been giving us information and letting you know how they feel through their skills. Marvin Gaye was one.
Absolutely.
You know, and of course, Curtis Mayfield been around for a long time. But I want to talk about another song that most people probably remember, and this was the OJs, and it's said, "For the Love of Money."
Mm.
We hear people say money is the root of all evil, but that is not what the Bible says.
It's the love
it
of
says,
money.
"For the love of money is the root of all evil." And when I ran into this again, I had typed this out some years back, I flashed back to Donald Trump and the apprentice program. This was his song.
That was his theme song.
That was his theme song. But a lot of people probably didn't even know what that song really means. And I'm gonna read those words too. And it starts off, money, money, money. Some people got to have it. Some people really need it. Do things, bad things with it. You want to do good things with it. And then it gets back into the course. They do this all during the song, for the love of money. People will steal from their mothers. People will rob their own brothers. People can't even walk the streets because they never know in the world they're going to meet for the mean, mean, mean green. Almighty dollar, that money. And then they say, for the love of money. People will lie. People will lie. They will cheat. People don't care who they hurt or beat. A woman will sell her precious body for a small piece of paper. It carries a lot of weight. For that mean, mean green, almighty dollar. Money is the root of all evil. Do funny things to some people. Give me a nickel, brother, can you spare a dime? Money can drive some people out of their minds. Got to have it. I really need it for the love of money. And then it basically ends with saying, don't let money rule you. Don't let it fool you. And people, don't let money change you, that almighty dollar. Now, for the love of money was giving you a message pertaining to what people will do for money. And for Trump to have that as a theme song, and he, of course, he didn't play the whole song and he wasn't letting you hear the words that were speaking. He only let you hear what he wanted you hear, for the love of money and the music. The song was so popular that you know it when you first when it first comes on.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And he used that. And now I guess we should have caught that then. You know, I didn't like it. I caught it then, but I was hoping that that didn't mean what I thought it meant, and looked like it did. He's greedy for money and might do anything for it. He pretty much bought this election.
Yeah.
Yeah, he got money. He already said he was going to spend some money.
Mm-hmm.
Man ain't lied. He told you what he's going to do. He really did, and you need to believe him, even though, and I guess a lot of people do believe him because they're protesting all over the world.
Well, now what I'm saying all over social media.
Speak up.
Now what I'm saying all over social media and TV is their main focus with Trump is focusing on how unprepared he's making himself seem for the presidency to try to sway people to believe that that the election might be revised. They might have someone else be appointed as president. We don't know, but that's what's being pushed into the media right now. That's what I'm seeing.
I covered some of that last week. Yes, we can. We could ask for a recount. We can ask for a recall.
Right.
And, of course, impeachment has always been there. All this is in the Constitution. Maybe I should bring that Constitution out next week and so we can read some of the parts there where it tells you he's doing everything that he is, that paper told him he can do, the Constitution told him he can do. And we will have to probably look into the Constitution and make
Absolutely.
Some constitutional amendments at the United States level.
Absolutely.
But I don't know. It
People
doesn't
are
do
also
any good.
Petitioning the Electoral College to.
Oh, yeah, that's another thing I'm going
to
look up so we can,
because
who are they? Where are they?
Right.
What is it?
Right.
You know, and a lot of people are complaining about that. Well, they did it during Bush's time, but we died out. We should have been looking into that Constitution and talking about some impeachments and stuff then. But see, now we have Trump, and in order for us to be powerful in any kind of way, I've been saying it takes a quantitative leap to bring about a qualitative transformation.
Absolutely.
And that means we have to have a lot of people, but there has to be a leap. There's no leap in just marching. We did that already.
Right.
Leaping means you do that and some more stuff.
Right.
And right now, we'd have to have enough registered voters to petition anything.
Absolutely.
And it shows that only half of the people that were registered voted, and it looks like a large population of it, is our people, okay? Didn't come out and vote. They didn't think their vote counted. Well, now you're getting ready to see how your vote counts, especially here in Oakland. See, they got a war going on, a food war going on right here in front of us at the grocery stores and at the fast food places.
With that grocery tax.
And we'll see the fast food places are pumping up because of that grocery tax. If we are taxed, it's going to appear that it's cheaper to feed your kids going to McDonald's, and it may well be. At least they'll have a full belly. It may not be the best food in the world, but they'll have a full belly. And it'll be cheaper for you to go to McDonald's, Jack in the Box, and rather than going to a grocery store. Now, guess what? All of those fast food places have sodas and chips, which a lot of times that makes up the meal if you're getting a whole meal.
Right.
And if it comes out as cheaper to feed your kids that way, that's what you're going to do. You're going to go to McDonald's, even Subway, who is supposed to have the good food on the sandwich and all that stuff, in which I do believe you can make very healthy sandwiches there at Subway. But guess what? To get a meal, you got to get the chips and soda.
Not only that, they have additives in their bread that we recently discovered. A lot of us fell for, like when Jared was the spokesman and he was really heavy to
speak up a little bit.
Jared used to be the spokesman for Subway.
Uh-huh.
He was really overweight. He was extremely heavy, and he lost a lot of weight. He became a slender man, and they hired him as their spokesperson.
Right.
What has recently been found out is that Subway uses materials from rubber bath mats and things like that as additives in their bread. So while we're thinking we're getting healthier, actually, you know, the additives that they're putting in the food, so really
they killing
it comes
us
down
too.
To we have to learn how to go back to the basics and feed ourselves. And there's ways to purchase in bulk. You know, there's ways to form a cooperative and go shopping together and purchase healthier items you know, and I have, you know, plans for those that we'll discuss at a later date. But there's ways to feed your family in a healthy manner using your crock pots and the old stuff that we grew up using as staples, beans and rice and, you know, potatoes and fresh vegetables and making a stew instead of using meat as a whole entree. You use it as a piece of the meal. You break it up into a casserole, and then you can still have that taste of meat if that's something that you indulge in, you know, in your meal, and your family still is eating healthier.
Yes, it is crucial that we start growing our own food and things like that.
Right.
I keep showing Bishop Luke Edwards. He's a minister in Mississippi who discovered that most of his church was on welfare.
Mm-hmm.
He said, okay, no, we can't have that. So he figured out what they were supposed to do. He got a small grocery store to start off with, and he told everybody to spend your food stamps here. From there, they've opened up restaurants. They now have hotels and stuff. As a matter of fact, I'm going to let you see that DVD so you'll see, get some ideas because you're the cook person. And what he did, everybody in his church got a job. Okay? Mm-hmm. And I've been really down on the churches here in Oakland. Chauncey Bailey brought out many, many years ago, a good 15 years ago when he was with Sobey. He was also one of the people with the Oakland Tribune and with all of the black publication papers. But he was also the news person on Sobey. He brought out many, many years ago that the black churches here in Oakland are depositing $10 million plus a week in the banks around here, and they wouldn't give out loans to those banks or to those churches, not
wow.
even to the churches. And they, of course, they're going to be leery about giving us loans.
Right.
But at least you can give the church that's putting millions of dollars in your bank every week a loan. Well, they wouldn't give them a loan. Now, I fought the churches on that. If you had a United, you don't need no loan.
Right.
After doing some research, after Sobey, people did some more research, they found out that most of those ministers didn't even live in Oakland. They come here and collect the tithes and offerings and deposit it to a bank in Oakland, but they spend the money in the town that they live in or stuff like that. They don't spend it in Oakland. Oakland is being drained by all sources of people and businesses, and
that's
we're
right.
being drained. I'm still doing the receipt thing. You guys keep your receipts because you're going to need to see how things change pertaining to the money that you're spending. Change is constant. As a matter of fact, contradiction is the ruling principle of the universe. If it wasn't for contradiction, we'd be standing still. You know, so we're going to have contradiction, and it brings about change. And I covered the beginning of when I was on the radio, the change cycle. If you go to BBS Radio and then SBFM radio website from there, you'll see I included a number of documents for you to read yourself. I haven't updated that in a while. I need to send them some more stuff. But anyway, it's going to require us to be objective, subjective, to your interests. You have to look at what's really going on and then think about what changes do you think that need to be made. And you have to use your critical thinking skills, logic, things like that, in order for you to come up with solutions today.
Well, critical to that is being able to separate yourself from what the mainstream media is feeding you and telling you you should think and what you should believe and where you should go and how you should eat and those things. Turn off the television sometimes and pick up a book. You know, go if you must be online, go to websites that have news that are outside of this country, because our media in this country is invested in misleading us. That's why it's called programming, because it teaches you what you need, what they feel like you need to know, and how you need to view the world. And also, feel free to talk to seniors, because that's what we need to get back to.
Yes, because they have that knowledge.
They have a wealth of knowledge that it will be lost to us if we don't go back and reach for it. We can learn how to grow our own gardens. We can learn how to make something out of nothing. We can learn how to protect ourselves and how to fortify our homes and make them safer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are lessons that our seniors have to teach us that we're just letting fly by the wayside, and that's because we've been taught that as you get older, you are of less value as a human being.
Did you have something to say?
Yeah, I did. I had something to say about speaking with seniors. My great-grandmother is suffering from dementia right now, and there's a lot of questions that I would like to ask her about things that she went through in her life and how she dealt with racism, and she can't tell me those things. And if I know for sure when she was more lucid in her younger years, if I were able to ask her those questions, she would gladly answer them. So it is important, I completely agree with that, to
Very.
Talk to seniors, and you'll find that they might share, you might find that you share the same taste in music, mm-hmm. or you like the same foods, or they might say something that could save your life. So I agree
That's
with that.
That's true. I am so blessed because I was fortunate enough to be with my mother for 68 years before she passed at 90. She had a full life there, if I be so blessed to live to 90. But anyway, she did tell me about what they had to do. She's from Louisiana, from down south there, and she did tell me what they went through down south, seeing the white kids on the bus. They couldn't ride the bus to go to school. They had to walk miles to the school, couldn't take the bus, and things like that. Mm-hmm. And having to, when you don't have any money, going to the grocery stores and see what they have, food that they have thrown away. Chitlins used to be thrown in the garbage, mm-hmm. and now it's just as expensive as steak.
That's right.
They've turned it into a delicacy.
Mm-hmm.
And this is some of the things that black folks had to go through in order to eat, was to go to the stores and see what they threw away. And I don't want to have to go through anything like that. So
we need
them, and our children shouldn't have to. You know, that's our future. What we going to do, set them up to be slaves? Because right now, that's exactly what black people are, slaves. They are slaved mentally.
Right.
And in their hearts. They have a slave heart, you know, and until we recondition ourselves, reteach ourselves, we're going to continue to have that slave mentality. That's why it's so easy for anybody, regardless of where they come from, whatever country, to come in and open up the small stores in our community. I been in my house going on 35 years, or it might be 35 years. But anyway, there's a corner store down the street for me. And the first time it was opened was about 20-something years ago. And the people in the community now, that store, that spot that they used for the store had been closed and emptied. It used to be a child care center or something. And it had been closed for years. Soon as these people opened up the store, the people in the community around here wanted to get angry about it because it was somebody that wasn't from here. They were Hawaiian. She was Hawaiian, and that was
Layla's his, Market. I remember that.
Across the street over there.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. And he was Arab, I believe. And that was his second wife, the one he had here. Well, she had a baby. I don't know if they got really married or whatever. But they wanted to complain about them opening up the store, and it wasn't a black store. And I looked at them. I said, that spot been there for years. And now you want to complain about it because somebody saw it and decided to turn it into a store. We could have did that ourselves.
Absolutely.
Just the people around here, You know, but we want to get angry because someone else opened up the store. Now, she was a very good person. The first people that got the store there were real good because she had a sign, a big old sign on there, and it says, what makes a good customer or something. What was that sign? I can't. Well, anyway, she had all kind of points there that was associated with how they were going to treat their customers and how customers are supposed to be. And, you know, they were very friendly people. Very friendly.
They were.
Uh-huh. And you remember that. That's been
Layla's thing. Market.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, anyway, ever since then, it went down. Downhill.
They've changed hands a number of times.
Oh, it has changed hands. Some of them changed hands because of me.
Hmm.
You know, they just changed hands again.
Right.
When that, remember I had to go down the street over there? I told the man, I said, they should have told you about me before you even bought this stuff. You know.
They were refusing to give you a receipt.
Yeah, they didn't want to give me a receipt.
And that's illegal. You have to give a receipt if it's requested for its purchase.
You don't have to request a receipt. They have to give you a receipt.
Right.
Simple as that.
Well, I'm saying my point is he asked for one and they didn't give him one. And then when you went, they were acting like they didn't want to give you the receipt.
I told them, give me my money back. I took the products back. Give me my money. Mm-hmm. And, yes, that's what I did. Give my money back. They didn't want to give me that money back. You know, that's what, $13
lost,
that they missed out on.
They've lost a customer base of at least 5 people so far. And as we tell other neighbors, they're going to stop shopping there as well.
Yeah, they don't want to give out receipts. And they are putting on there when they buy alcohol and cigarettes, non-taxable. They're still doing that.
Hmm.
Yeah, they're still doing that. I'm going to put all them receipts together and give them to the city council, give them the name and address of the business so they can do a sting.
Right.
It's a whole bunch of stores that are doing that. And see, that means they're not paying the city of Oakland, the amount of taxes that are going to be, you know, that they're making. They're not submitting the right amount. And then now with this soda tax, it doesn't apply to stores that sell less than $150,000 a year. And I fail to conceive that when these little stores are selling beer, wine, cigarettes, and other tobacco products, that they're not making $150,000 a year. That just don't make sense to me. How can you say that? I'm seeing what you're selling here, people.
Right.
People don't come there to buy no food. They come to your store to get that beer, wine, and cigarettes. Yeah, that's your number one seller. But yet, they don't want to pay taxes on that. Now, I have a strong feeling, and I'm watching, because those that have the liquor stores that sell hard liquor are family members of some of the people that have the small stores.
Right.
So I have a, and we're watching it, I have a sneaky feeling that these smaller stores are not buying the alcohol like they're supposed to. They're getting it from the liquor store.
Okay. Family members.
Family members.
Mm-hmm.
And it will show in their records that they have not purchased that much alcohol or beer or what have you. And so they can't tax that. They can't tax that. I have a feeling that some of the cigarettes that have been coming through here haven't even gone through customs.
Oh, that's absolutely true. There's a store in West Oakland that is not allowed to sell tobacco any longer.
That's right.
Because they got caught in that exact type of thing.
Right. Well, their family picked it up. Somebody else picked it up because they're still doing that. The same thing could be with alcohol. The liquor store itself that sells the hard alcohol and beer and stuff may not even be paying for the alcohol either.
What makes that even easier to pull off is that our ports are no longer American-owned. The Port of Oakland,
we got a mess.
California, let's just speak on California. It has the fifth largest economy in the world, not in the nation, in the world. And our ports are no longer American-owned. They're owned by Middle Eastern countries, by Japan, and by China. So it's easy to pull that off if your employees are not American. If they have an inroad as far as a link to the stores from the employees, it's easy to pull it off.
I know, and I have a problem because they're not paying their taxes. They'll have to, the city has to do something in order to generate the money. And so they're going to tax something in order to bring money in.
Right.
So I'll put it this way. We're going to have to be careful because some of the people from these countries don't care anything about us.
That's right.
They will feed us anything. Even if they're Muslims, they'll sell you the alcohol and the pork, which I don't really have a problem with, okay, because you don't have to, you ain't forced to eat it. But I have a problem when they're not paying their taxes, which brings it back down to the other people that are paying their taxes. And so we're going to have to watch out for things like that because I think I consider them terrorists as well because they are killing us internally.
That's right.
And purposely, I wouldn't consider it terrorism if they weren't doing it purposely.
Right.
It is clear that they're doing it intentionally.
Absolutely. When the options that you have are high sodium, high sugar, they might put a little corner with some fresh produce, but the produce sits there until it's no longer fresh.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can't get to a real grocery store, then you're forced to purchase that old produce, you know, and prepare meals, and that's another way to make yourself sick.
Mm-hmm. And we're looking at all this stuff and not doing anything about it in our communities. They know that because you're really only mainly coming to their store to get that alcohol and then cigarette products. You buying those beers and those wines, and some of those beers and wines are stronger than hard alcohol, or it has the same effect on you.
Right.
You know, and they selling a lot of that. I know that for sure. But anyway, it's about time for us to shut down. Is there anything else you have to say?
I'm just really encouraged by the resurgence of the Black Panther Party. There are a lot of young people that I've met downtown who are active and who are activists and spreading the word. And, you know, utilizing the 10-point program and making people aware of it. And that's encouraging to me because I've seen us shrug off so many things that have happened to us nationally And so to know that the party still exists and it's not going anywhere is of high encouragement to me.
Yeah, I wish they had been more involved in the election, because they used to do that. But see, they're just trying to get back together good. So because they would have somebody at every poll making sure that everybody was able to vote. Because
right.
We had some voting suppressions, as they called it,
absolutely,
in this country, where people weren't allowed to vote, or had they did something to the folk to prevent them from voting. But anyway, do you have something briefly to say, JJ?
Just briefly, I just think it was really nice to be able to sit here and discuss a wide range of topics. And for those who are listening, don't be discouraged. Continue to educate yourself and move in a positive way. And I just hope to be here sometime soon and share more of my thoughts from a youth perspective.
Yes, and I will be inviting you back. If not, you'll be calling in.
Absolutely.
Okay. Knowing is not enough, we must apply. Willing is not enough, we must do. Until we meet again, I love you.